everyone. It is your girl, Nye, and you are tuned into Faces of Success Radio 101 FM. As you already know, it's time for our exclusive interviews with the stars. And this evening, we have the legendary musical composer, arranger, producer, and musician, Mr. Richie Love. So Richie is no stranger to the music business. He began playing sax at the age of 6 and performed on hundreds of live venue CDs, TV, and radio broadcasts. He has worked with Headline 4 and studied under the legendary group of musicians and songwriters of Johnny Otis, Buddy Miles, Andre Lewis, Reg Alexander, Reggie Vision, Ricky Miner of The Jay Leno Show. He's the head on bass on the television show as well. Norman Connors, Curly Martin, Charles Williams, and many, many more, just to name a few. Ricky plays all saxophones, alto, tenor, soprano, baritone, flute, and many more instruments. He's a composer, an arranger, a producer, a vocal teacher, and a mentor, CEO of Sax World Productions since 1985. And we're not going to keep him any longer. Everyone, please give a warm welcome to the one and only Richie Love. Hello, hello, how are you?
Hello, how you doing tonight?
Fantastic, and I must say thank you so much for being in the studio. I gave a little bit of a synopsis about you, but please introduce yourself and tell us who Mr. Love really is.
Well, thank you so much. First of all, it's an honor to be on your show, and I thank you so much for having me. And I am Richie Love, all the way from Los Angeles and Omaha, Nebraska. And I thought your synopsis was very eloquent. Thank you so much. And I'm just trying to continue to pass it on to some of the young people, as one of my life goals is to keep the music alive. That is so important for me. Yes, to keep it going, pass it on. Our young people, they need to know the real where we come from as creators, as African American creators of all music. We are the beginning, and we will be the end.
Mm-hmm. And so starting off, of course, you have such a wide range of people you've worked with and inspirations, but what would you say means the most to you when it comes to music? Like, what is the anchor when it comes to music and what music means to you?
Well, music to me, I have said it before, and I guess music is my life. It has been for many, many years, since I was a child, because of my father, of course. And so it is the foundation of so many things. It is a great foundation, as we know. It soothes the savage beast, but it also crosses lines, color lines, and it crosses over to all music. It's universal. It is the universe. It is music. I was listening the other day, and they said, I saw an interview, and they said that people with Alzheimer's, they can forget everything, but they don't forget the music. They don't forget the words to the song or songs that they grew up with. They don't forget that. That's the only thing they don't forget. And that was so amazing. I had heard it before, I think several years ago, but I really didn't grasp it until I heard it just about 2 days ago. I was watching a documentary. And that was so amazing to me, that with Alzheimer's, that they don't forget the music. These are professors that were speaking of this.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. And so it just, to me, it is the universe. Music is the universe. It is It's math, it's quantum physics, it's energy, it is learning, it is one of the greatest things for the brain. It's so much. It's so much wrapped into one entity. And so it's just, to me, again, it's everything. And I continue to try to achieve all that it has to offer, to explore and to find things that are still wrapped up in there that I want to find. I want to find all of its wonderfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find it all. And I've been playing music. I've been since I was six, and so I've been doing it, you know, over 50 years, pretty much.
Mm.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And with such a profound definition of what music means to you, and it's very true as far as music being a worldwide or a universal language that we all can communicate and agree
yes.
upon. Having such the opportunities of performing with legends like Count Basie, Billie Holiday, the Jacksons, Marvin Gaye, it just being around such heavily musically inclined people, what was it like for you as far as being on stage and giving it your all? Were you ever nervous? What was going through your head when you were performing for such heavy hitters in the industry?
Well, I guess early on there were times when I would be nervous, and what I learned is what that taught me, and what I learned from that was, if you know your craft, if you are the best and you know what you're doing, get nervous, because it is just like I'd say brushing your teeth. It is just
mm-hmm.
you get up and you do it. There's nothing that you, there's no question to it. There's no fear of the unknown. There's no, that's what makes you nervous, is the fear of the unknown. And so when you know what you're doing, when you go up there, you know exactly what you're doing, or you know your instrument so well that even if you don't know what they're going to do, you know your instrument well enough that anything they throw at you, you will be able to overcome. So that the nervousness is eliminated. You know within yourself that you can
mm-hmm.
overcome any obstacle that is thrown at you. But when you are with a group and you go up there and you know the songs and you have rehearsed those songs and you know that you have them to the best of your ability and knowledge, then there is no nervousness, no matter how many people
mm-hmm.
there are. You're just going up there and trying to give of yourself and trying to make people feel you, what you have to offer, what's inside of you. So there's no nervousness there. But when I was, before I learned that, you know, it was like, uh-oh, you know. There's 300 people out there, oh, my God, if I mess up, you know. So, yeah, that, you know, when I was younger, I had those times. And I taught myself, I said, now, why was I nervous, or how can I stop that? Because sometimes, a couple times, I was so nervous, it's like, really, you're nervous. I was like, this, what's going on? And I said, know what you're doing. So I put
mm-hmm.
that time in. Before I hit that stage, I was putting that time in. I know what I was doing. And so there wasn't, it eliminated all that. So I would say that would be my suggestion to people that are listening that have nervousness or anything before they perform.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. And with
yeah.
with all of the instruments that you have mastered, so to say, the alto, tenor, soprano, baritone, sax, Flute and many others. Which one would you say speaks to you the most? Because it takes time to really develop and master these instruments as far as reading music and learning how to finger positions and controlling your breath. And it's a lot when it comes to mastering these instruments. So what would you say, which one speaks to you the most?
Well, I would probably say there would be two, and that would be the saxophone, because that was my first instrument, and the piano, because the piano is the root of, really the root of all music is the piano. And my godfather, Johnny Otis, who discovered Etta James and Jackie Wilson, quite a few of some of our great African-American artists, I went to him and I said, what can I do to be the best on the sax, to be a great, great saxophonist? And he said, learn the piano. And so from that day on, I concentrated on also making that a part of me. And the piano really speaks to me now. And, of course, the saxophone, my father, Preston Love, Sr., who was the man who played with, like, all of those people you mentioned, Marvin Gaye, Diana Ross. He was the West Coast head of Motown. They created this position for him. Well, he was the lead saxophonist for Count Basie and Billie Holiday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's where I got the saxophone from. So that's been a part of my life since before I even knew myself, you know, really, through him. And so at a young age, when I got my first saxophone at six, I mean, it's been a part of me. Been a part of me. So it's like very, I'm connected to it. So I'm very, very connected to it. It's a part of me, you know. And
go ahead.
No, I was just saying that it's a part of me. It has become a part of me.
Most definitely. And with having such a love for it, what would you say are one of your most memorable moments performing, whether it's on sax or on piano? What would you say are one of your most memorable moments or performances throughout your career?
One of my most memorable was performing probably with Johnny Otis. And we were performing at the Civic Auditorium in Santa Monica. And it was always just the greatest thing to perform with him. Just to play with him was just, I don't know, it was mind blowing. We start playing the song, and the people start jumping. The whole crowd was jumping up and down. And I looked down, and the concrete started. It was solid concrete, and there were so many people, and they were jumping so hard, the concrete actually cracked down the middle. It was unbelievable. I watched it crack.
Wow.
Santa Monica Auditorium. It's like, wow. That was like really a trip, you know. And then, of course, one more real quick one. When Buddy Miles was with my group, Buddy Miles, who played with Jimi Hendrix and the great Buddy Miles from Omaha, Nebraska. And he was with my group in Omaha when I moved back. him and the great Andre Lewis, also from Omaha, who was with Motown, has several albums.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were both with me, and having him with me was a great honor. Just growing up listening to some of these people and kind of idolizing them, a lot of people that I idolized and I grew up to play with them, was such an honor, and it's so uplifting. Just to know that I had at least come to that point in my career, in my life, and my music, and my just to know that I had come to that level, to from watching and idolizing to actually playing with them, or in some instances having them in my band, you know, and being one, you know, being the one now that's moved to that level to where I'm the, you know, the lead. And so that was quite an honor, quite a memorable time for me in my life. And that was really, really wonderful. And I still cherish those moments.
Definitely. And with that, and having such great moments, and holding down the torch as far as soul music and music in general in your career, how do you feel about the transition in music now versus music then?
Well, some of it, I really am sorry to see the direction that some of our music has been taken to, because it lacks the realness of our true artistry. We, as a people, are the greatest performers, creators, innovators. We are the greatest. We, in music and a lot of aspects of life, have set the standard. And now it has been kind of removed out of our hands, and another side has been put in to distract from who we really are, what we really were, and we've come down a level. In some parts of music, and the parts that are still like the real performers and real musicians have a hard time getting their accolades, because you know there's, just as in Hollywood, we are discriminated against. I say it all the time.
Right.
Like when you listen to commercials on the radio, when you listen to commercials on TV, and you listen to movies and TV shows with soundtracks, you listen to all these soundtracks. We are not getting that. We're not getting those sound. We're not getting those movie soundtracks, those million-dollar contracts. Just like the Oscars, we're there, and we're there. And then even if we're there, they don't want award us for our Oscar-winning performances. And they're not awarding our songwriters and composers with movie. That's when you're a composer, that is your Oscar, to say, for Warner Brothers or any of the movie people to come and say, hey, we want you to write a soundtrack
right
for our movie that's coming out, and get some of those billion-dollar contracts that those people of not color are getting and that are not even half of the talent that we have, some of them. You hear some of the singers and the performers that aren't even half of some of us. And even if they are, be inclusive. You know, I'm not saying that there's not talented people
right.
that are. I'm saying we're not being included. We're being discriminated against when it comes to, when you go into, and I have done it before, when you go into some of these stores, and I won't name names, but some of the big
right. okay.
brick and mortar stores, and you hear the music playing on the over the speakers. You go to the malls and you go to the grocery stores and you go and you hear the music playing. We should be included in that. A lot of times we're not mm-hmm. included in that. They're making money. They're getting mechanical rights. They're getting paid for play.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting money in their pockets. When those movies are playing, they're getting paid. They get paid to do the soundtrack, and then they, if that movie makes it, which, you know, a lot of them do, if they're at the theaters, they're going to make it. And
right.
then they go video, they're getting royalties. And that's how they get rich. We're not getting that. We're not seeing that. It's non-inclusive. And with the music that is out today, some of the music that is out today, I'll give you an example, and it really, really upsets me. I was watching. This has been a few years.
Okay.
Move That Dope.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That doesn't represent. They want the companies put that out there. The record companies are putting that kind of stuff to distract the upcoming artists. We could be, instead of people knowing, our youngsters knowing Duke Ellington or Count Basie, knowing the history, mm-hmm. Gerald Albright, Marcellus Branford, Quincy Jones, but they know Push That Dope. Well, what is that message sending to them, the kids?
That's very true. And if I may interject, do you think that overall music has evolved and the listening ear right now is to more of the hip-hop and,
right.
For lack of better words, urban sound,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people
mm-hmm.
are gravitating towards that because that's quote-unquote what's hot now. Do you
right.
think there will ever be a shift or change? Because we all know that trends consistently revolve or come back around and things come back into
right.
style, and it all comes back full circle. But do you think that we will get back to music like many of the greats eventually, with it being so heavily hip hop involved?
I think we will, because one thing it has to, because there's going to be a time if they continue to only push things that are negative and are creating negative things in our communities and in our children's mind, it's got to come back around on them. It's going to come full circle. And there's still people out there, like in the big cities, Los Angeles, New York, and Kansas City, and there's still jazz. There's still smooth jazz. There's still jazz. There's still R&B. It's still out there. You just don't hear about it because they don't want us to. They don't want to push that. They want to push this. I'll tell you, like to big record companies, because I started my own record company in 1986. I released my first record in 1987. I produced rap. I took and mentored children out of Compton, out of Watts, out of Los Angeles, all the urban. I went and produced. I used to love rap. I used to produce it. I used to produce the kids because I knew that that was a form they didn't have. They took all the music programs out of the schools.
So that
was the way they had. We're going to create music as African Americans. We're going to find some way to express our inner selves through music. I don't care if it's rapping, beating on a drum machine, or scratching on records. We're going to create. We're going to find some way to create music. And so that was the way that the kids were creating. They didn't have the music, right? So they'd hear a funk record.
Right.
They say, "Oh, let's start rapping." And that's basically, they'd hear a funk record from the 70s. That's why they sampled James Brown and all the records that they sampled. Not just James Brown, all the real music, the real players, these instruments, these horns, and they sampled it and rapped over it because that was the only outlet they knew. They didn't have the instruments in front of them. Because if they had the instruments in front of them, they would have created it. They would have created their own music, and then it maybe rapped over that. But they didn't have that, so they went to the next best thing. And so, and rap, it still is in some areas and some points. Rap was and is a great art, but it's been taken to this level that record companies are like, no, we don't want to sign you. We want to sign the guys that are talking about going and shooting and selling dope.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to sign this positive rap. It was surprising that Public Enemy was signed. You know, that's why they didn't make it as big as they could have, because they were talking real and black. Anytime.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of almost, you know, they still made it. They still were great because you couldn't deny their energy. You couldn't deny what they were saying. So the only way to stop it is to suppress it. And so that's what that's all about. The music of today. So I will go back. So the music of today, the record companies try to say, oh, that music isn't happening anymore. That bands and funk and horns and all that stuff, people don't buy that. What about Bruno Mars? Why are they buying Bruno Mars? They pick their tokens, you see, and so do you know how many thousands and thousands of black urban kids there are out there creating funk and bands? They're still out there, but they tell them, oh, no, we can't sign you because people don't buy that no more. What about Bruno Mars? What about
In addition to that, it's become a lot more about the numbers than it is about music. And, I mean, of course, it's always been about numbers, but it's more so instilled now than it was then in regards to a fan base, how many ticket sales you're going to be able to sell, how many records you're going to be able to sell worldwide and in the U.S. in general. So it's definitely hard for a lot of people to, even if they wanted to get signed, but also as independent artists as well, when you think about it, it's a lot more hard work that goes into it when you don't have the tools versus when you do have them. And with that being said, let's speak on Sax World Productions, which you mentioned.
Yeah.
And how do you think that Sax World would be able to give the tools to a lot of people who are interested in creating their own music and creating their own sound and maybe even getting into the hands of a major label?
Well, the first thing that I try, the first thing I do is explain to them just what some of the stuff that we just got through talking about. Don't believe the hype. Go back to Pumpkin. Don't believe the hype. When we talk about numbers again, they know that we can have the numbers because it goes right back. The numbers are when you are presented with, hey, the way Bruno Mars sells is because he's got, they put enough money behind him and they put him out there. How many billions of people in the world? All you need out of the billions and billions of people in the world, all you need is 2 million to download your stuff or buy your CD at $14. Now it's streaming. Now it's a lot more streaming and stuff. But, okay, so let's say out of 27 billion people that 10 million download your stuff for 99 cents. Do the math. You see what I'm saying? But they have
right.
the money. It's out there, here. It's right here in front of you. It's easy. You just click this button, and you got it. And so the way that I help, try to help my people, I say, first of all, do not be distracted by what's going on. The first thing you have to do is be the best at what you do. That's number one. So we try to teach everybody that we're involved with to be number one. Sax World began in Los Angeles teaching, like I said, the kids that were trying to be something and go somewhere. That's when, around the time when rap first started, when I started helping the kids, like in the early 80s. One of the first raps, of course, was Curtis Blow, "These Are the Breaks." Then it was Rapper's Delight. Okay, that was the first, really the first two raps that went mainstream.
Yes.
There was a lot of rap in New York. It really kind of started in New York, mainly, I mean, mostly. And Curtis Blow came out with that. And then, okay, that did it pretty good. And then when Rapper's Delight, boom, that opened up the world to rap. That was mainstream, you know. That's when it really went mainstream. Okay, then you had the urban kids that latched onto that. They start like, wait a minute, you know, you start rapping. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, and then they start sampling beat, and it just evolved. Well, then that's how gangster rap started, because that's all they knew. Gangster
right.
rap was, they weren't making this stuff up about shooting and selling drugs, and they were
right. It was their life.
That's what they. I grew up in Los Angeles, and when I moved back to Los Angeles, I was in Compton and Watts. I was all, so I know because I saw it. You know what I mean? I saw what was going on. But anyway,
right.
so you know that's what I began teaching with Sax World. I began teaching. I'd say, okay, when you come off the street and you come in here, into this studio, and I'm going to show you how to write a rap. If that's what you want to do, I'm going to show you how to write it. And then the next thing, I'm going to show you how to mix, make a beat. That's when we started. I would make beats for them first, but eventually the evolution is to do your own, make your own.
Right.
Start your own studio. Know how, know what you're doing, how to do it. Research the business. You got to do it. It's like opening a business. You've got to go do your research on, is this location? Is this the right location? Okay, if this is the right location, do they buy whatever you're trying to sell? Do they buy food at this? You research. So that's what I was teaching the kids and everybody that I deal with, is research on if you're going to make a record, then you need to research, okay, find out what, who's hot right now, who's doing what, what does that sound like? Okay, well, I need to at least try to be somewhere close to what's going on, but still be individual. Don't be a copier. Don't be an imitator. Be an innovator. I've always believed in trying to innovate under within the circle. You want to still be an innovator, because imitation is just that. You know, that's what you always be known as. And so I've always tried to not just conform to, not just have my artists conform to, because the record companies always, again, it goes back to them, they always try to put you in a certain category.
Right, a box, yes.
A box, they put you in the box. Oh, you have to, you have to do disco when disco was hot. Oh, no, you have to do disco. Oh, no, you have to have this. Oh, no, you have to have that. And almost some artists, it crushes, because that's not who they were or what they were. It's like George Benson was one of the greatest guitar players ever in history, probably will go down in history as being one of the best. And he had to conform to the record companies because they're the ones with the checks, you know.
Right.
And they're not, the majority of the time, they're not of our race. They have the money, they have the power, they have the control. And so we did what we had to do, and some of us came out on top, some of us didn't. And some of us conformed to the point and just made some of the greatest music through that. You know, like some of the artists came out with some of the greatest, okay, we're going to conform then, and we're going to do it like you want us to do it, and came out with some of the greatest stuff ever created. And so as we because we are what we are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest creation of music, in music, my father always used to say, he would hear a beat and he'd see a little kid and he'd say, look, he said, you see that? He said, that comes from Africa. Because when they beat the drum, boom, 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 it's in us. And we can feel it. It goes back into our genetics, our psyches. And that there's a beat, there's a heartbeat. It's like a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And then when they brought us here, they couldn't take that away.
Mm-hmm.
And then we began to. We still had the beat, so a lot of our ancestors were in the slave shacks. Boom, 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 boom. That's where the chanting of the, when they were picking cotton or whatever, the chanting. Still, there's the music, there's the song. Then, guitars, because we created the guitars and the drums out of trees and calf skins and the strings they create out of animal guts, or you know what I mean? And so as they begin to do that here and create music, and then the blues, that's where we had the blues, you know.
Right.
That's where blues came from. And out of blues came instruments, jazz. Some of the same changes in blues are the same changes in jazz. Some of the same formula that you use for jazz songs that comes from the blues. Banjo, folk music came from us because we had banjos. And I don't know if you know the story of the banjo, but we created the folk music out of banjos, and some of the people start taking and painting on the blackface and making fun of us,
mm-hmm.
and the downgrading thing. So black folks went, we don't want to touch the banjo. We won't touch the banjo because it was so degrading. They
right. Let's keep everything on a positive, reflective.
Oh
and,
yes,
and,
yes.
And
no.
Thank you
so
for.
I just meant to go. Yeah, I will. I didn't mean to go there. I just was trying to give you a little history of how we created music. So that was how we created folk music, jazz, and blues. Blues came from. Jazz came from blues. And then funk came out of the jazzy. They start making it a little funky. Okay, then the funk came. James Brown. Then we evolved into the company's disco, was kind of funky up dance. And then it went to the rap around the late 70s. They went back and started sampling some of those funk records and start rapping over them. That's what evolved into that. Now it's going back. You notice for a while there, music sounded like disco again.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's kind of
very
going
true.
Back funky. For a while, almost everything sounded like disco again. It's like, man, that sounds just like that song from Good Times. I mean, not Good Times, but Chic. the group Chic, you know, they did. They did some sophisticated disco, I would call.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I must have to ask you, what with having such a clear vision as far as where music is going, where music has come from, what is up next for you and your career? Are you having any plans for your company? Are there any upcoming performances? What would you say is next for your music evolution?
What's next for me, I have a CD that is about to come up. I'm trying to finish. It has 17 songs and all original. And so everybody's telling me, no, cut it down, you know. So I'm going to say 14 to 15 songs on my new CD. And it's like funky, really funky, funky, funky stuff, upbeat. And I'm teaching and mentoring here in Carolina. I have some of the greatest young talent, jazz artists. I have 11 and 12 and 13 and 14-year-old kids that I'm teaching the history and teaching them jazz. And so I've got some of the great, I believe, some of the upcoming greats coming up from here. I mentored in Nebraska. I had some great rap artists that I mentored that now they have record companies and old CDs out. So I'm trying to continue that. First of all, number one is trying to continue to, as we, when we first start speaking, is give it back. Make sure that the everybody that I come in contact knows the history, and to give them what they need to move on in their career, whatever they choose, but to know the history so that they can use that inside the inner self. The inner self creates better music, a better you, inner self, inner peace. And so that's what I try to teach. And so I'm working on some tours. I'm going to Omaha. They're naming a street after my father in July. I'm going, I do a concert there every other year for Omaha Days. I've just returned from Los Angeles with the great, fantastic Barbara Morrison, jazz vocalist in Los Angeles. And she has a blues and jazz museum in Leimert Park, and she has a performing arts center in Leimert Park. And so I've just did a bunch of dates this summer there with her, and some dates with her and at the Performing Arts Center. And so I'm coming back to Los Angeles. We're working on a Europe tour, and just continue to travel, spread the love through the music, come out with the CD. My website, I don't know if you're familiar with it, richieloves.com is my history. And so I'm trying to keep that updated, keep everybody in the know on what's going on with me. And number one, I would say, I guess I say it a lot too, is spreading the love through the music, because it's all about,
of course,
it truly is. It's all about love. It really is all about love. And anytime that you can just keep that love going,
absolutely.
It just makes you,
and
yeah.
And we're going to share a little bit of love to you. We're going to take a break for a quick minute and actually play your Reflections freestyle in the studio for everyone to take a listen to.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right, everyone. We're going to take a break for just a quick moment. And this is Mr. Richie Love's Reflections freestyle.
All right, everyone, that was the one and only Mr. Richie Love's Reflections Freestyle. And oh my goodness, what inspired that overall? Because I know different things speak to different people at different times, but with a freestyle, it's completely different. It's all raw. It's all authentic. So what spoke to you in that moment for that freestyle?
You know, actually, it's funny because I wrote that song, and that's me. I'm playing all the instruments on there. And so I wrote it, and I was in Carolina, and I went back to Omaha, and a great friend of mine, he has a really nice studio I used to work out of with him sometimes, and I was there on vacation, and I was actually picking up my father's horns. I had my father's horns stored in Omaha, and I went and got my father's horns, and I called him, and I said, you know, I'd like to come by and just hang out with you and record a little something on this track I have. He's like, yeah, you know. So I went up and actually had my father's horn. So I said, just put it on, you know, and I'm just going to play. And I think that my father's spirit, like, you know, it's like he just took over, you know. Like, I just closed my eyes, and I just tried to play from the heart and just kind of feel the feeling of playing with his horn and being back in Omaha and just let the feeling back with my friend because he's a great friend of mine. And I just kind of let the feeling go. It was all positive. It was all, you know, just a great, I was feeling good, you know, just a positive feeling. I was like, yeah, okay, and just let it go. I told him, just put it on and let it go. And a lot of times that's what I try to do with my music. Like in the studio, I try to rehearse and have it ready. Like I'm saying about going on stage, and try to rehearse and have it ready. So when I get in the studio, there's not a lot of punching, you know, stop and catch it there and do it. I try to go straight through. And so that it creates that live feeling. Well, with this, I hadn't rehearsed it a lot. So I just went from the heart, you know. And so he was like, don't mess with it. Don't touch it. And so we just let it go, you know. And it really, and then I had kind of in a way forgot that I had my dad's horn with all this stuff going on. And it was like, oh, and when I said, you know what, that was partly dad in there, you know, he's trying to get his in there, you know, and he had passed away and stuff. And so it's like, he's trying to get in there with his spirit, you know, get some of his feeling in there. And it really did, to me, it kind of came out, you know, a little bit, because it, you know, like different horns sound different, you know, like the brand. And so you can get a different sound. Some sound soft, some sound, you know, like I said, just different sound. And so it kind of had a little bit of his sound in there because it was his horn. And so it was really, really cool, you know, cool vibe on that song.
Definitely. And we're actually going to play another one of your songs before we close out here. We have I Still Love You in the studio.
Yes.
So before we get into that, what inspired I Still Love You?
I actually wrote that song in Los Angeles about 1985. And I wrote it for my grandmother because the words, and I had told her I loved her, but the words were, I'm sorry that I didn't let you know how much I love you and how much I feel, what I feel about you. And I'm sorry that I didn't let you know. And so it evolved from there because I really had let her know, but it was like, I wish I had told her more because I loved her so much, you know.
Aww.
And so, yeah. And so it was like, so it was really, I wrote it for her, really, for my grandmother, Grandma Love. And so that's where that song came from.
Well, we're getting ready to cue it in. Everyone, please take a listen. And as a dedication to the lovely Grandma Love, this is I Still Love You. Stay tuned with Faces of Success 101 FM. Mr. Richie Love, I have to ask you one more time. How can we keep up with you and continue to support you in all your endeavors? And can you tell us your official website and social media sites for us one more time?
Yes, yes. It's RichieLoves.com. It's my name with an S, www.RichieLoves.com. And that I keep updated constantly, so you can always find me there. I'm on Facebook. And a lot of times when it's Facebook, Richie Loves, I believe that, I believe so too. And Twitter, Richie Loves Sax, at Richie Loves Sax. And that's the majority of sites that I'm on most of the time that you can catch up with me. Sax World Prod is my Gmail at Gmail. You could always contact me through there. And for anything, questions, bookings, anything, through Sax World Productions, it's saxworldprod at gmail.com. And hopefully I'll be coming to a city near you soon.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Richie Love, for being in the studio, and you have a fantastic evening. Thank you so much.
You too, and I want to thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and look forward to talking with you soon. Thank you so much.
Of course. Everyone, the one and only Richie Love has left the building. Beautiful spirit, a fantastic insight on the music of today. And we're going to get into some tunes right now for us to get us right back into the swing of things. It's Monday, of course, coming to an end, leaning into Tuesday for some of us on the East Coast. So let's get some up in spirits. We got some smooth soul from Mr. Richie Love, but let's get us pumped up and ready for the next day, because it's going to be a long work week for a lot of us. You're tuned into Faces of Success Radio 101 FM.
Right now, in a third of mine, I wanna be in that golden time. Ain't got no tears of the crime. So I'm picking it up, picking it up. I'm loving, I'm living, I'm picking it up. I'm picking it up, picking it up. I'm loving, I'm living, I'm picking it up. So we turning up, yeah, we turning it up. Ain't got no tears in my body, I ran up a boy, I like it, I like it, I like it. Don't matter how, what, when, who tries it, we out here vibing. turning up. Yeah, we turning it up.
Gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah. Look how I'm geeking up. I'm so pretty. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on Giddy. Just watch me move. This is Belly. That's cool.
Yeah.
On my Kodak. Black. Ooh, know that.
Yeah,
ooh, get it. Yeah,
yeah.
Ooh, work it. Yeah. 100 bands, 100 bands, 100 bands. 100 bands. Contraband, contraband, contraband.
Contraband.
I got the plug on who a hawker.
Whoa.
They gonna find you like Paco. Blah.
Ooh, America. Ooh, I just checked my follow and listen. You motherfuckers owe me.
Get your money,